This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 77 was recorded on November 11th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. Forest for the Trees founder Luke Groman is back with us today. This episode of Macro Voices is brought to you by TopTradersOnPlug.com, which happens to be my own favorite podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. Luke, it's been a while since we've spoken. What's got your attention recently?
Hi, Eric. Thanks for having me back on. So last time we talked was, I think it was around October 14th. So that was just 3 days after the Fed had been forced in to begin growing their balance sheet again by $60 billion per month. And you know, back then we said the following, quote, "We've been saying that the Fed would be forced into this position, and on Friday they were forced into it, and Kaplan just admitted it. The narrative of the Fed's response to the repo spike, it's just temporary and technical, just failed. And in our view, this sets up some really interesting opportunities for investors' position," end quote. And you know, so we then talked about why the narrative was failing, what that meant. And you asked us, you know, what opportunities we saw developing, to which we noted the following, which was, quote, "Our bet all along has been that the U.S. government will not let itself go out of business for lack of printed dollars. That bet now appears to have begun paying off. It suggests being long the S&P against the TLT, and being long gold, silver, and we think Bitcoin a little bit as well."
I remember that. And as I look back to my notes from that show, I asked you, since you had mentioned in each of your prior interviews that you thought gold could sell off if real rates rose a bit once the Fed was forced to expand their balance sheet again, which had begun happening and then seems to have continued in recent weeks. And at the time, you responded with an answer that your core view on gold was unchanged, but that tactically you could see some weakness. So I really want to give you credit, Luke, because frankly, I'm a long-term, very gold bullish myself. My frustration with a lot of gold bugs is they just don't ever want to see that there's ever another side of it. And you've not only been right about the long-term view, but you've been right about the tactical view of saying, hey guys, we could see some weakness here. And boy, we've got some. So where are we headed? Is there going to be more weakness? What comes next?
Yeah, I think that tactical core delineation is a good way to think about it. And we've seen that back off. You know, I think really, as long as real rates keep rising with the Fed doing what they're doing, I think it's probably going to be a weight. It's going to be a weight on gold markets. And we have seen S&P TLT rise by the S&P over TLT ratio rise by about 10%. You know, and like I said, gold backing off with those real rates. So, you know, in terms of the equity side, I think we could be due for a bit of a pause on the equity indices, but the underlying dynamic, you know, that we described in mid-October continues to hold. You know, I've been fascinated to watch what I'd call an ongoing shift in the narrative from temporary and technical to not temporary but still technical to not QE. And in the last couple of weeks, we've had a few more strategists get close to describing what I, you know, at least describing it in a way that I think is really the crux of it. But they're still seemingly unwilling to refer to it by its true name. And you know, as you probably remember from our conversations earlier this year, this is why we were calling the dynamic of the Fed effectively financing U.S. deficits, you know, Voldemort. It's just people were afraid to say its name.
Well, you know, it's fascinating to me. There is so much sensitivity about certain words. And monetization is like a four-letter word in finance. If you say that the Fed is monetizing the government's deficits, that is conspiracy talk. You must be some kind of fruitcake if you think that. But it's okay to use different words to describe that exact same process as long as you don't call it that. So Luke, how do we tie all of this together? Why is it that monetization cannot be called monetization? And so if we're not going to call it that, what's actually going on here?
It really has been like this interesting transition. And when you talk about the words, right? I mean, like late September, it was organic balance sheet growth, but it wasn't QE, right? And then in late October, the Fed announced it would increase its temporary repo program by 50 to 75%. And you know, the response to that upsizing led one strategist to quote, you know, or to remark something that it nearly made my coffee come out of my nose when I read the comment. He said it was, you know, temporary open market operations is not QE. But in the meantime, it looks an awful lot like the New York Fed is accidentally monetizing the U.S. Treasury in slow motion. So, like, accidentally monetizing the U.S. government in slow motion is like, after I cleaned off the coffee I'd spilt all over my keyboard, I made a note of the comment because I'm not laughing at the person. I think it's an important signpost where, you know, when people are being presented with the evidence that this has sort of begun, this effective monetization, like nobody wants to call Voldemort by its name, which is that the U.S. government's effectively being financed in short-term debt markets, in this case at least, by the Fed. And to your point, I think there's a real fear of being called crazy or doomer. And you know, I know this because I've been called those things this year and you know, in certain circles. So, but you know, for me, I'm wired differently than some people. It's, you know, throughout my career, when I've done my homework and I know I've done my homework and I find that people are still calling me crazy, I actually kind of get excited because more often than not, those have been massive home run calls for my clients and for me as a result. But I think that's the issue, what you identify, what's happening is just so crazy. People are just almost afraid to say the name, you know, Voldemort, you know, the Fed's effectively monetizing U.S. issuance.
Well, I think it's, you know, in finance, everybody is taught to know that monetization of government debt is an emerging market third world phenomenon. Could never happen to the United States. If you say it's happening in the United States, you must be a crackpot. So what is the next step here, Luke? We've got the Federal Reserve not engaged in QE and not monetizing government deficits, supposedly. How is that going to play out from here?
Yeah, it's clearly the world needs more dollar liquidity injected, and we can see that by what happened last year with emerging markets broadly in terms of, you know, the dollar tightness there, and you know, year to date the dollar liquidity problems in the U.S.'s own banking system that we've discussed before with, you know, with Fed funds rates going over interest on excess reserves earlier this year, and that culminated in the repo spike, of course, in September. And so, to me, the question becomes a game of how fast is the liquidity provided relative to how fast is needed, and you know, to a lesser extent, how it's provided. And by that, I mean, it can be more non-QE, it can be more repo. You know, you could also have the rolling back of banking regulations, as apparently was at least touched on last week between Mnuchin and Dimon, apparently. But you know, as long as those discussions are taking place, then you know, I think that can mean that the dollar shortage super spike scenario can be, you know, kept at bay, if you will. And in total, that's probably a net good setup for risk assets in the intervening time, as we've seen since mid to late September.
Are you watching for any catalysts that might cause the Fed to either pause or reverse this non-monetization that they've been doing, which, by the way, is not QE? It just seems like if they make even the slightest mistake, we could get a sharp risk-off event and USD up. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, in terms of any one catalyst, I'm not really watching for any one catalyst. I think there's, you know, a whole bunch that could conceivably cause that, ranging from trade to political to geopolitical. You know, so we'll have to watch and see. But one thing that has really grabbed me recently is I can't find anyone willing to say we don't have one more risk off before what, you know, so many have called the end game, quote unquote end game, occurs, which is, you know, the Fed monetizing U.S. deficits on an open ended basis, which, just haven't done this for as long as I have, fascinates me. I mean, we've got the Fed accidentally monetizing U.S. Treasury issuance in slow motion. They've undone 10 months of QT in 9 weeks in response to what was a very brief but a very serious crisis in repo markets. And yet, as far as I can tell, overwhelming consensus, and when I mean overwhelming consensus, I mean nearly unanimous consensus, is that we need at least one more risk-off crisis before the Fed goes to, you know, this sort of more open-ended monetization of deficits that everyone's allowed to call open-ended monetization of deficits.
I don't know if they'll ever be allowed to call it that, but what does that make you think about what might come next? What might bring about that risk-off event?
Well, you know, I'm sure you've seen these kind of setups before in trading, Eric, you know, but for me, haven't done this for nearly 25 years, and every time I've seen a situation where everyone's waiting for an event to be their trigger to jump in,
Well, yeah, the event that they're watching for the trigger usually never comes, and it usually goes the other way. And I'll tell you, this whole what I've been calling narrative failure around the Q4 scenario. Q4 19 is going to be just like Q4 18. So many people thought that they were all positioned for it. And I feel like what's going on right now is that narrative that never comes. And it looks to me like we're going into melt-up mode as everybody says, oh, shit, I missed the boat. I was on the wrong side of the trade.
Exactly. I mean, it's you know, it's almost unanimous that we need another crisis before the Fed moves to what, you know, some have called this end game. But the thing I keep asking myself is what if the repo rate spike was the crisis? You know, if that's the case, then, you know, like you noted, most market participants are probably still off sides in terms of positioning, even with what, you know, the big move up in the S&P over TLT have done over the past 4 weeks. Because when you look at some of the data, that sort of, you know, 4Q19 withdrawal of liquidity has sort of been completely neutered by what the Fed did over the last, you know, 6-7 weeks.
Okay, let's get an update on your market positioning. It's been almost a month since we talked to you. So last time we talked, you were long SPX over TLT and long gold, silver, and I think also some Bitcoin. Well, what's the update?
Yeah, I'm still positioned that same way. I still like S&P over TLT. Like I said, you're probably due for a little bit of a rest because, you know, 10% in 4 weeks is quite the move. But ultimately, the U.S. government, the U.S. economy needs S&P over TLT to rise to new highs pretty much ad infinitum, which up until this past 4 weeks, you know, S&P over TLT had not risen to a new high since early 2018. So, and we've seen that, you know, the slowing U.S. and global economy, which, you know, it's sort of a chicken and egg question, but we still like S&P over TLT. You know, regarding gold, silver, Bitcoin, you know, like we said before, I still think the pull of real rates could continue to weigh on them in the near term, but ultimately, I think we'll begin to see real rates turn much lower again as we move into 2020 and beyond as inflation begins to pick up, because really, that's the only way this math can work. You know, the U.S. and the world need much higher nominal GDP growth in dollar terms, which, you know, means we need much higher dollar inflation, that central banks don't allow that inflation in turn to be reflected in nominal interest rates by either pinning yields or, you know, doing BOJ curve control or QE or whatever they want to call it, however they accomplish that. But the bottom line, in our view, which, you know, is really sort of the core view, is that the only way the math all works is if bonds are effectively turned into certificates of confiscation on a real basis, which is what happened the last two times the world were in periods that were, you know, sort of like this, which are both during and immediately after World War II and again in the 1970s.
Well, Luke, I can't thank you enough for another fantastic interview. We look forward to getting you back on next month for another update. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com, my favorite podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. And remember to head over and listen to my conversation with its host, Niels Kastrup Larsen, which we released on September 7th, 2019. To get the slide deck that Niels shared, head over to toptradersunplugged.com/macro slides. And as a listener of my show, you're also able to get Niels' latest book for free by going to toptradersunplugged.com/macro. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.